Today, let's talk financial advising, retirement and tax strategy. Where to put your money, the good, the bad, and the ugly, 'cause today will help you build your legacy with the fire on the wall.
All right. Well, welcome to Fly on the Wall Finance. I am your co-host, Tony Shore, and I am here with our wonderful host, Jamie Malm. Jamie, great to be here with you today. We're talking about beneficiaries and mainly avoiding mistakes when you inherit an IRA today, right?
Yes. I mean, it can certainly be a blessing, right? And if we're thinking about two sides of the coin, either we are going to be passing on our hard-earned money, our IRAs, things to our 401k, things to our loved ones, our kids. But we may also be on the receiving side where we inherit that from our loved ones. And there's mistakes that can be made. If you're not careful, we can get some nasty tax surprises. There's rules that we need to follow, all designed to help keep more money in your pocket. So that's what we're talking about today.
Yeah. And that sounds great to me. I think that's really a good thing. And beneficiaries, it's important whether you're putting a beneficiary, whether you're a person who is planning your legacy and your estate plan, and you're like, who should I put as a beneficiary? You need to think of these things that we're going to talk about, but especially if you inherit something like a retirement account that's tax deferred, there are so many rules that go along with it, aren't there?
There are. And we're not always thinking about the tax consequences and some of the rules that come along with it. We think, well, inheritance, that's a blessing. That's a great thing. But inheriting an IRA, which is specifically what we're going to be talking about today. And when I say an IRA, remember, that can be any type of qualified IRA. So I'm not differentiating between like a traditional, a simple, a SEP, could be a 401k that you have at an employer. Well, when that leaves the employer status, it rolls over to an IRA. So we're talking pre-tax money, right? Money that has not been taxed. We'll talk a little bit about where Roths fit into this. Okay. But inheriting an IRA isn't the same as inheriting cash. There are rules, there are timelines, there are tax consequences. And that can completely change based on one, who's inheriting it, and how you take the money. And we've got legislative change that we have to worry about. What, you know, the rules that were in place even 6 years ago, totally different than they are now. They could be different than they're going to be in years to come. So we need to be aware of all of those things and make sure that we are planning according to those.
Right. So today is basically how to not accidentally give half of your inheritance to the IRS, because these rules are designed to make sure they get their money, right?
Yes. I mean, the IRS, think about it, with these pre-tax accounts, nobody's ever paid taxes on those. Yeah. And so the IRS is saying, hey, you've all enjoyed tax deferral long enough. We now want to start getting our money from that in the way of taxes. So we're going to cover what's changed with IRAs. We're going to cover some of the biggest mistakes to avoid, and then strategies. So hopefully we keep as much as possible, either to pass on to our loved ones, or if we're on the receiving end of that, then we're keeping as much as possible in our pockets.
Sure. So that sounds good. Where do we start?
I would say let's start with what's changed. So 2020 is a key year for differentiating the rules. 2019 and prior, we had a totally different set of rules for what happens when we inherit an IRA. So this goes back to the SECURE Act. Prior to 2020, if you inherited an IRA, you could stretch out tax deferral over your lifetime. What that means is, if I inherit an IRA, that's money that's never been taxed. If I just pull that money out, so let's just say I inherit $200,000. As the beneficiary, if I just pull that money out, well, I owe taxes now on the full $200,000. That has skyrocketed me into a higher tax bracket. I now maybe have lost, 35-40% just to taxes. So prior to 2020, I could choose instead to stretch tax deferral out over my lifetime, meaning I'm not going to take that $200,000. I'm going to let it sit. I'm going to let it continue to get its tax deferred growth. And I'm just going to take a portion out every year. And that made a huge difference in the amount the beneficiaries actually received. For anyone that now passes on an IRA or inherits an IRA after 2020, there may be different rules. And so there are some questions that we have to ask ourselves to determine, okay, now what kind of path do I follow? Which this is where it can get kind of confusing. We almost need like a flow chart. Maybe if we're watching this on YouTube, could you like direct and maybe get a whiteboard out and just start scrambling to write these notes? I'm just kidding. I'm not going to make you do that. First thing, we have to ask ourselves, are you a spouse or a non-spouse? That's going to be a key differentiating factor between what our rules are. If you are inheriting an IRA and you're a spouse, you have a lot more flexibility, a lot more options, which we're going to discuss. So let's assume we're a non-spouse. The next thing we have to ask ourselves is, okay, this is where the flowchart comes in. I'm a non-spouse. Am I now an eligible designated beneficiary? This you might see referred to as an EDB. Okay, an eligible designated beneficiary could be a minor child of the original deceased owner, so they have to be under 21. It could be individuals that are within 10 years of the age of the original deceased owner. So think siblings would be a good example of this. Maybe I pass away, I leave my IRA to my sister, she's within 10 years of me, then she would qualify as an eligible designated beneficiary. Also, people that are disabled or chronically ill. If you fall into one of those categories, you get to play by the old rules. You can still stretch the tax deferral out over your lifetime. If you don't fall into one of those few categories and you are a non-spouse, so think kids, this is the most adult children, I mean, not minors, but this would be the most likely scenario. My mom or dad passes, I inherit their IRA. I'm not a minor. I'm not chronically ill. I'm not disabled. I'm not within 10 years. So the new rule that applies to me is I cannot stretch that over my lifetime. I have to have it distributed within 10 years. So that's the key differentiating factor that we look at first.
So it has to all come out of the IRA, the traditional IRA, and all of it has to be, taxes have to be paid on all of it within a 10-year period before that 10-year period is up. 10 years from the date you inherit it, right?
10 years from the date of the owner's death. Yep. I think technically it starts the year after. But yes, so that's the IRS saying you've enjoyed tax deferral long enough. We're not going to let you stretch tax deferral out over your lifetime anymore. We want taxes and we want them within 10 years. Yeah. So now we have to think about, well, what is the impact then? If I have just 10 years to empty that account and every withdrawal is taxes ordinary income, although I don't have to take a little bit each year, maybe it's another flowchart area. I probably don't want to wait until the end of the 10th year to pull it all out. That's going to have the same impact as it maybe would have if I'd have just done it to begin with. I'm just kicking the can down the road because now I owe all those taxes in 1 year.
Yeah. So, and that would definitely push you into the highest tax bracket probably. Right. And so you don't want to wait until the 10th year to take it out. If you take a little over time, that might be the best strategy. Or maybe take more out earlier when taxes are low or when you have something to offset it, right?
Right. So that's the first question that we ask ourselves is, am I a spouse or non-spouse? If I'm a non-spouse, am I an eligible designated beneficiary? That kind of determines what rules I'm going to fall into to start with, which can get confusing.
So, wow, I can't believe that was just the first question. There's a lot here to keep track of, Jamie, which is why I think people want to work with and need to work with a financial professional to get clarity on this and to make sure you're making the right moves and no costly mistakes, right?
For sure. If you, you know, unless you're dealing with us all the time, this isn't probably something that you just know the rules or remember the rules off your head, or maybe you remember a portion of them, but you can't quite remember the details. You don't want to remember some and not all. That might be where, like, I almost had it right, but I missed this one thing, and now I created this taxable event that wouldn't have had to happen.
Sure.
So the second question then is, how old was the original owner when they passed away? This is important because if they were already of the age where they had to take required minimum distributions, that's now at age 73. This is another example of the IRS saying, you've enjoyed tax deferral long enough. Now you need to start paying us. So eventually when we get old enough, the IRS says you have to start pulling a little bit out of this every year so we can tax you on that. So if the deceased owner was already of the age, 73 or over, where they are taking required minimum distributions, you as the new owner have to continue those. You have to continue taking that every year. And you still have to have it distributed by the end of the 10th year completely. You have to have taken all the money out, paid taxes in full by the end of the 10th year, but you have to at least keep taking the required minimum distribution annually.
Yeah. So, yeah. And so it depends on whether or not they were old enough to have been taking RMDs already or not. And that will affect you. So
yes,
you need to
know
that.
If they weren't of the age in which they had to take RMDs, then you don't have to. Let's say my mother passes away. She's only 69 years old. Well, she wasn't taking an RMD yet. I inherit it. I don't have to take an RMD. I do have to have it totally distributed by the end of the 10th year. So who am I? Am I a spouse or a non-spouse? Am I an eligible designated beneficiary? And how old was the deceased original owner? That determines, do I take a little out each year, or do I have the flexibility to let it sit and just take it at the end of the 10th year if I wanted to?
Sure. Well, I can see through all of this why having a strategy from day one can really make a difference, why that matters, right?
Yes. And just, you know, if somebody does wait till the end of the 10th year to distribute, just remember that all taxes are due that year, which, as we've mentioned, wow, could push you into the higher tax bracket. So just because you can doesn't necessarily mean you should. But let's talk about spouses for a little bit, because spouses have a ton more flexibility. A spouse can actually just roll it into their own IRA. So you don't even have to follow the path of titling it as an inherited IRA. And while we're talking about titling, I will say sometimes you'll hear this referred to as a beneficiary IRA. It's the same thing. And it's worth clarifying sometimes, because somebody might say, well, I inherited this IRA. Well, did you inherit an IRA, or do you have an inherited IRA? The difference is usually, did I just take the lump sum? Did I inherit it? And now it's just, I pay taxes on it. I've now got that cash. Or did I keep it titled as an actual inherited IRA? And there is specific titling. It'll be the deceased owner stays on the titling. So if I pass away and I give it to my daughter, Emma, it's going to say, when Emma owns it, it will say Jamie mom deceased for benefit of Emma mom. That's what the titling will actually read. So if you're not quite sure, that titling is important, because that's how the coding happens with a triggering event and whether the IRS is going to get something saying, oh, no, you didn't actually title this as an inherited IRA. You cashed it in, took it. If you're a non-spouse, you paid taxes. If I'm a spouse, though, I can just step into it as my own. Now it's just my own. So I pass away, Brad gets it. It's just now Brad mom's IRA. No special titling, no special rules. He just has the IRA.
It's amazing how many different scenarios and rules there are. You have to know these rules before you touch that money.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. And most times a spouse would simply take over the IRA as their own. There wouldn't be a need to stretch, but Remember, an IRA is a retirement account. Individual retirement account is literally what it stands for. And so we can't touch it when we're too young, right? We have to be that magic age of 59 and a half before the IRS says, okay, you're old enough, you're of retirement age, we're going to let you start making withdrawals. So let's assume I'm a young widow. I'm under the age of 59 and a half. My husband passes away. Then maybe I don't necessarily want to take the lump sum. I don't want to pay all the taxes on that, but I have the option, if I need money, to not just step into it as my own, but to stretch it. Why would I do that? Well, if I step into it as my own, I'm under the age of 59 and a half. I've now locked it back up again. I can't take any withdrawals without being penalized. However, if I stretch it, I can tap into, okay, now I can start taking a little bit out each year over the 10 years, and I've mm-hmm. just stretched it, and I don't fall into the same rules of that pre 59 and a half. So really, what spouses decide to do, you've got all the flexibility in the world, but know what you need, when you need it, and why you need it. And then we can determine how it's best to structure it for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes sense. And, you know, obviously, Jamie, again, there's so many rules, so many ins and outs. I think people should call you, sit down, ask the questions, don't make a move with an IRA period, let alone an inherited IRA, without working with a trusted financial professional, right? I think that's big. What's next? Where do you want to head next with this conversation?
Well, I mentioned that we could talk about Roth IRAs, and I think it's worth noting here that a Roth IRA is like inheriting a golden goose, right? You don't have to pay taxes on the withdrawals because the original owner already paid the taxes on the contributions. And a Roth grows not just tax deferred, but comes out tax free. So inheriting a Roth's awesome. We don't have to pay the taxes. But I do still have to follow that 10-year rule if I'm a non-spouse, which is important to know.
I wonder why is that? I mean, so there's no RMDs and you don't owe taxes on the money. Why do you still have to drain it within a decade?
I assume the tax deferral portion of it, but I don't make legislation. So I don't know the minds of the politicians and why they decide to do what they do. So you're right. No annual RMDs. I still have to take it in a decade. And key point to remember is a Roth has to have been open for 5 years or the earnings could be taxable. You can always access your contributions at any time. We can always pull those out no matter what. But in order to access the interest that I've earned, I have to have let that sit for 5 years. And that applies to Roth conversions too. So let's say my mom or dad had a 401k or an IRA, and they started doing some conversions later in life. Thought, okay, I want to start paying some of those taxes. We're going to start building up this tax-free money. And they have made a conversion 2-3 years before they pass, and I inherit that. That's important for me to know because I can't tap into those earnings then unless they've sat for 5 years. So just know, like you said, know all of the details of what you're inheriting or what you're passing on before you touch the money.
Yeah, that's where planning comes in, right?
Yeah, regardless of whether it's a Roth, whether it's a traditional, the timing of your withdrawals, how strategic we are with it, that can literally save thousands of dollars in taxes. And if you're not in retirement yet and you inherit something, that's something else that has to be considered, because why would I choose to pay taxes in a year where I'm working? My income is probably higher than it's going to be if I'm near retirement. If I'm a few years out from retirement, I inherit something. Well, that might be a reason to say, if I don't have to, if I've got this 10-year rule that I can play with and I don't have to take anything in these first couple of years, I'm going to choose to defer taking it when my income drops, when I don't have all this earned income that has me in this higher tax bracket. That's going to help keep taxes lower.
Yeah. So the idea is to pull the money out when your tax bracket is lower, not when it's at its peak, basically.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. And another thing in regarding to pulling money out, that's something that I see when folks inherit things, maybe it's company stock or something like that. There's this feeling sometimes of being disrespectful to the person that left it to you if you make a change. And I think it's worth talking about that you should always be reallocating based on your goals and your risk tolerance, your timeline. Not only is it okay, but it's really a must to keep that money working for you. And sometimes there's this feeling of, I shouldn't make any changes. That's what they own. They left it to me, so I should leave it as it is.
Yeah. And that's a good point. I think some people feel like they are dishonoring the person if they change the investments at all. But everybody's situation is different, and you're probably going to need to do some things to fit your own scenario, right?
Of course. And I think a good way of thinking of it is the loved one that left you those assets, they left you the account to help secure your future, not to freeze their investment strategy in time, not because something that they owned was more important than what the money could do for you. And I'll give you an example. Brad's grandparents owned a construction company. His dad's part owner. They gifted Brad, even when he was a minor, we owned it forever, Caterpillar stock. And we did not change that Caterpillar stock for years because Brad felt like, that was really important to my grandpa. It's tied into his legacy. We're going to keep that. And eventually we made the decision that, you know, that's probably not tying in real well with what our overall strategy is. And we made the decision to sell it. But that was an obstacle for him to overcome. So I know there are some things that feel a little bit sentimental. But eventually we had the discussion of, I don't think that, you know, it was just what he knew. It was what he was involved in. And you invest in what you know is the old mantra. But it wasn't something that was serving us well. Right. And you have to think about what was the intent with the money, with the legacy that they've left you.
Yeah. And I think the bottom line here, Jamie, is there are so many rules and the situations aren't one size fits all. So this has been an eye opener. How can our listeners and viewers get a hold of you and get help with this topic if it's a concern?
Yeah, I think this is a topic that's hard to discuss, right? Because we're talking about legacy and we're talking about either our assets that are going to be left when we're gone, or we're talking about inheriting assets when our loved ones are gone. So it's usually a topic that people avoid. We don't like to talk about it with each other, but at least I would broach the subject with a financial services professional to say, I think this is coming my way, or this is what I'm going to be leaving, which either side of the coin, maybe you're going to fall into both. But a little pre-planning can save tens of thousands of dollars. It can save heartache. It can save, you know, just so many so many things can be solved by miscommunication and errors that you just needed to talk through a professional with. So if it's important to you, if it's something that you think is on the horizon for you, you can go to our website, which is simply ironhorsefinancialservices.com. You can always call our office. It's 620-377-6456. And all of our consultations are complimentary. We don't ever charge to sit down and have an initial meeting with us. We don't even know if we can help you yet. So first things first is just to have a conversation with somebody and talk through, how does this apply to me? What should I be thinking about? And what kinds of things can I do to be strategic in my planning?
Awesome. And Jamie, thanks for helping us with a tricky topic today and explaining that. Very educational. And that does it for today's episode of the Fly on the Wall Finance Podcast with our host, Jamie Malm.
Thanks as always, and we'll see everybody next week. That wraps up another episode of the Fly on the Wall Podcast. Join us next time as we continue the conversations and bringing you behind the scenes in the world of finance. And don't forget to stay connected with us on your favorite social media platforms and subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. And we will see you next time.
All matters discussed during this show are for informational purposes only. Opinions expressed are solely those of Iron Horse Financial Services and staff. All topics covered are believed to be from reliable sources. However, Iron Horse Financial Services makes no representations as to its accuracy or completeness. This commercial shall in no way be construed as a solicitation to sell securities or advisory services to residents of any other state other than Kansas or otherwise permitted. Topics should be discussed with your financial advisor prior to implementation. Advisory services offered through Iron Horse Financial Services, a registered investment advisor in the state of Kansas. Insurance products and services are offered through Iron Horse Retirement, an affiliated company. Iron Horse Financial Services and Iron Horse Retirement are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any other government agency.